public hearing on House Bill 5022, Department of Forestry. Susie, would you like to start us out?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, you have in front of you a packet on the Department of Forestry with some log trees on it that I'm going to start with. The 2005 governor's recommended budget is $238.4 million total funds. Of that, $201.8 million is for their operating budget, and of that, $36.5 million is general fund lottery funds. And they have budgeted for 0305, 904.11 FTE. I'm going to skip over the mission and purpose and let the department defend their mission and purpose. And move on to page 2. The pie chart at the top of the page shows that over 85% of the Department of Forestry's budget is other funds. That's $162 million at about 69%, and non-limited other funds 12.5%. They have federal funds of $26.6 million and general fund of $36.5 million. And general fund is kind of sprinkled throughout their budget. So as they move through their programs, you'll find the general fund mentioned in each program area. The chart at the bottom is a breakdown of their program expenditures. As you can see from the chart, that protection from fire is the largest portion of their budget. And state-owned forest lands is next. That just gives you a proportionate view of the department by program area. On page 3, the chart at the top of the page, the bar chart, shows the sources of funds. Majority of forestry expenditures relying on other funds, as I mentioned before. The increase in the 2103 budget is primarily due to the severe fire seasons. The agency has backed those costs back out in their projected budget for 0305, which is a little bit more in line with the 9901. There are budget and policy issues. There are 8 of them. As the department prepared their budget, as I read through their budget, the adequate funding for statewide forestry technical assistance, the impact of statutory language on budget development, that is the primarily for the Forest Protection Fund, because the way the statute is written, the Forest Protection Districts have to prepare an annual fiscal budget, and we prepare our budgets on a biennial basis. That causes a little bit of problem in projecting what the costs are going to be, because we don't know what the actual costs are until we're into the budget season. Fire protection and unprotected lands, appropriate level general fund match for public share fire fund, statutory limits on aspects of the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. We will be discussing that in a separate bill, but it applies to this budget. Renewal of forest products harvest tax rate, the forest management costs for common school forests and other state-owned forests. I believe you had a discussion about that last week. And adequate funding for enforcing the Forest Practices Act. Also in your packet, I have provided for you a list of the issues that were dealt with by the Emergency Board. Primarily those have to do with the fire season. And on the back side of that shows the special session actions, beginning with the legislatively adopted budget at the close of session on through the last action in March. If you want this broke down by program areas, I can get that to you, but for now I'm just providing the department as a whole. The next handout is a list of the budget notes that the agency had responded to during the interim. There are 6 budget notes, and the disposition of those budget notes is noted to the right. And the last hand, oh no, it's not quite the last. The next handout is the agency's policy packages on the first page, and then the last 3 pages are remaining reduction options that the agency identified for in preparing this budget. The governor took some of those in presenting the budget to the legislature, and these are what is remaining. And then the LFO analysis that I tried to get out to you last week. So last thing that I wanted to just talk about a little bit was just the week of hearings. Today we're just going to do agency overviews, by little orientation, the governor's recommended budget, and then the agency is going to do an overview. Tomorrow we're going to start working on the programs, protection from fire, forest practices, forestry assistance if we can, and then move through the programs, nursery, state forest, agency administration, and then on Thursday, equipment pool facilities, capital improvement, and capital construction.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of Susie?
I take it you want to do Lori.
Lori Byerly.
Good afternoon, Chair Messerly, members of the subcommittee. For the record, I'm Lori Byerly from the Department of Administrative Services Budget Management Division. And in front of you, you should find a familiar packet, some standard budget management handout. And what I'll do real briefly here is we'll kind of walk through what's in the governor's budget for the Department of Forestry for 2003-05. Let's take a look on page 2 of the handout. You'll see a comparison of the department's budget over time. If you look at the change between the 2001-03 coastal protection budget and the 2003-05 governor's budget, those change columns are over on the far right-hand side. You'll see the budget's an increase of about 6.7%. If you go to the next column and see the difference between the fifth special session figure and the governor's budget, you'll see a decrease. This has to do with additional funding the department received between the close of session and through fiscal fifth special session to deal with extraordinary fire costs related to the 2001 or 2002 fire season. You'll see if you look at the positions and full-time equivalent, the department is staying relatively flat compared to close of session figures. Not a lot of change there. Moving on to page 3, this is how the Department of Forestry's dollars comes in terms of funding type. Susie had broken out on that slide she just showed you a few minutes ago. You'll see that predominantly the budget is other funds for this department. 15% of it, about $36.5 million, is general fund. It supports protection from fire, forestry assistance, forest practices, and some administration programs. The federal funding piece is 11%. One change you'll see in the 2003-05 budget is that some of the funding that previously came in as federal as other has been actually shifted to the federal funds category. So you'll see an increase in federal funds, but that has more to do with it's for two reasons. One, for a category change, and also for some additional funding that's anticipated to come from the federal government. Close to that mic. On page 4, the governor's budget is an 11.5% decrease from the 2001-03 legislatively approved budget to the fifth special session. If you look at that first bullet, changes approved by the 2002 first through fifth special sessions account for about $3.2 million in general fund reductions over the course of the biennium. The budget comparison table we looked at previously does not really illustrate these cuts since they were offset by general fund increases the agency received over the biennium. So there was some takeaway and some give back, and some of those give backs have been phased out for 2003-05, but it's hard to see over time if you look at those numbers really what the impact was during the biennium. But they did receive general fund cuts to general fund programs over 2001-03. Some of the actions that were taken to reduce general fund were holding positions vacant, reducing services and supplies expenditures, deferring vehicle and equipment maintenance and replacement, eliminating some capital improvement projects, and abolishing some seasonal and permanent positions. On page 5, some of the things that the 2003-05 governor's budget does do, it does continue core services while continuing some general fund reductions. It supports cooperative fire protection, forest plan implementation, and smoke management activities. It also provides for state participation in federal forest enhancement and conservation programs. It reflects some adjustments for base fire protection costs and the recording of federal dollars. Like I said, we changed some of the other as federal to federal as federal funding sources. It also adds positions to staff at Tillamook Interpretive Center. On page 6, you can see at $238 million total funds, the department's budget for 2003-05, how it's split out by program area. These are specifically budgeted categories. These were budgeted by appropriation for this department, so you'll see a line for each of these in the agency's budget bill. And it kind of shows you by percentage. By far, the biggest chunk of the department's budget is in the Protection from Fire program at $96.4 million. On page 7, budget categories for the department. About 43%, $102 million, is in personal services. The next largest portion comes in the services and supplies area. This is a department that carries out a lot of its activities through its own staff around the state in various offices.
All right, has the governor's budget taken out the inflation of personnel services, or is that yet to come?
Chair Messerly, members of the subcommittee, this budget does not reflect the reduction in merits or any other adjustments, other than there have been some cost of living increases taken out for some salary range 38s and above. But this does not have the inflation or merit adjustments.
Do we have any indication of when those computations will be made?
Chair Messler, members of the subcommittee, we'll be working with Susie Jordan and the agency to try to calculate those merit changes. We have a file to do that, and I believe we'll just continue to work with Susie to try and identify the numbers related to those inflation factors.
We'll do that during work session.
Okay. Chair Messler, as we go through, we talk about the inflation package. You could at least see what was plugged in for inflation, which may give you some idea about where adjustments might be made for the inflation piece, and I'll mention that when we get there.
Second.
On page 8, how we started to develop or put together the 2003-05 governor's budget. We began with the 2001-03 legislatively adopted figure of 221.6 total funds. Included some changes that had occurred that were legislatively approved up through April 2002. And the September of 2001 Emergency Board added $410,000 general fund for forest fire severity and rapid suppression response. This came from a special purpose appropriation that had been set aside for those uses over the course of the biennium. In February 2002, the Emergency Board added $38.5 million other funds for fire season costs. This expenditure limitation allows the department to receive reimbursements for firefighting costs from the federal government, other sources, and then turn around and make payments for the costs incurred for fighting those fires. The 2002 second special session reduced general fund by $1.7 million. And at the April 2002 Emergency Board, $1.8 million general fund was added for fiscal year 2002 base level costs of fire protection. So you'll see here from these ins and outs why over the course of the biennium we don't see a lot of change in that total general fund figure. After adding those approved actions, we also included some base budget adjustments, the roll-up of 2003 position actions, and some compensation changes. Like I just mentioned earlier, we have not taken the adjustments here related to the not giving granting of merits in 2003-05, so those adjustments still need to be made. On page 9, moving on to essential packages that were used to come up with a good budget figure for 03-05. Package 010 is personal services adjustments that relate, they're not directly derived from salaries but from related costs. This package reduced expenditures by $130,000. It includes adjustments for expected vacancies, mass transit taxes, overtime, and benefits. Package 020, program adjustments. You'll see a phase out here of about $30 million. This relates directly to the extraordinary fire costs we talked about the agency had come in and asked for expenditure limitation for. Most of this figure is $31 million that's phased out because we're hoping that those are one-time 2001-03 costs, so the department should not need that expenditure limitation in 03-05. As part of a program adjustment, we also restored just under $400,000 general fund for one-time cuts that were made in Senate Bill 5575. This bill was passed during the 2002 second special session, and these were changes that had been identified as being one-time only administrative type of reduction, realizing, of course, at that point in the biennium, we were not really sure that the ongoing budget problem was going to continue. The hope was at that time that things were going to improve and these could be one-time type of reductions. And then package 030 reflects inflation and price list adjustments of $4.7 million. And this is where you would see changes that were put in for inflation and state government service charges. Most inflation is at the 3.5% level, except for certain line items within state government service charges, which are based on the state price list.
Of that figure, what is the number for the state government service charge? Will we hear that in the presentation?
Chair Messley, members of the subcommittee, just the overall state government service charge figure is about $3.9 million, and that's made of several components.
Okay. We'll want to talk about that.
Chair Messerly, members of the subcommittee. Moving on to page 10. Continuing with essential packages, Package 050 is a package that shifts some funding and expenditures between revenue categories. The first part of this package shifts $3.3 million in other funds expenditures to federal funds, which better reflects the actual revenue source. For a variety of reasons, the department had been recording these funds as federal as other, but it's been evaluated and determined that we no longer need to do that. We can truly reflect these as federal revenues as well as federal expenditures, so that shift has been made. It also moves 614,000 other funds to general fund. This change continues the shift of service forestry positions off forest products harvest tax revenue, and this was a change that was initiated during the 2001 regular session. This is a continuation of shifting that program over. It also reverses a one-time fund shift that was made during the 2002 second special session that was related to some of the Oregon plan expenditures. We made fund shifts not only in forestry but in some of the other agencies as well, to make use of available lottery funding and federal dollars. Package 060, technical adjustments of $1.2 million. This package adds general fund and the special payments for public share fire fund to address a shortfall in the fire program's base level of services. Over several biennia, inflation adjustments for this program have not kept up with actual program costs. The way the general fund portion of the public share fire fund works in the budget is it's appropriated to the department. They make a special payment to convert that funding source to other funds in order to use those expenditures alongside the other funds they receive from the fire districts to pay for fire protection. Since that money is expended as a special payment, it doesn't really get the same treatment as personal services costs would when they're generated against the cost of actually employing people to operate the program. So that special payment fails to keep up with inflationary costs for personnel and for staffing. So we've made an adjustment to try and offset that so the department can keep that general fund component up at a reasonable level. On page 11, policy package 081 relates to actions taken during the 2002 third special session. This reduction of about $12 million does eliminate cost of living increases for agency leadership. As I mentioned previously, there will be more COLA adjustments that would need to be taken as a result of the governor's direction. This did incorporate those early decisions. On package 091, 2002 fifth special session actions, a reduction of $13.3 million. The 13.3 figure includes both general fund and other fund reductions. What happens with several of the department's programs is when there's a general fund cut made, there's a corresponding other fund relationship because there's some cost-sharing relationships. So both pieces end up being reduced in the budget. What we did for this package is we took actions that occurred during the fifth special session and biennialized them to come up with a number for 0305. Eliminates 39 positions at 54.80 full-time equivalent and does end up funding general fund by $5 million. The remainder of that 13.3 is other funds. Impacts include reduced policy analysis and formulation, reduction in interagency cooperative projects and data management, less assistance to family forest landowners with activities such as reducing hazardous fuel and improving forest health, a decreased program management, landslide consultation, smoke management efforts, civil penalty collections, forest operation inspections, and program monitoring, and also a reduction or decrease in the amount of fire training and fire analysis reporting and prevention. So you can see that these cuts pretty much go across all of the department's general fund activities and kind of impact all program areas.
Yes, Senator Dukes.
Lori, there's $5 million in general fund there and $13.3 million total. What's the rest of the money if it's not general fund?
Chair Messley, Senator Dukes. With the Forestry Department's programs, I'll take it, for example, Protection from Fire Program. Half of the cost or a big portion of the cost is funded by general fund, and there's a matching component that comes from landowner assessments. So when we reduce the general fund side of the program, we reduce that relationship on the other fund sides as well, because there's a statutory relationship as far as cost
share. It's more than half, but it's all landowner?
For protection from fire. Then in forest, some of the other forest programs as well, there's like a 60-40 type of relationship that's in statute as well.
Okay, so the rest of this $13.3 million is all
other funds. From various sources, Senator Dukes.
So I can't call it all landowner?
Well, Chair Messley, Senator Dukes, it's a variety of, it's different types of assessments, but ultimately, yes, the people predominantly paying into that system are landowners.
I mean, if I wanted to restore it, I need to know who it is I'm dinging if I would
have tried
to restore
it. Chair Masterson, it would probably be forest landowners, yes.
Thank you.
On page 12, continuing with policy packages, package 111 is fire program at the most efficient level. This is a package for $6 million other funds. This adds other funds limitation expenditure to accommodate expected billings for fire season 2002 costs that the department expects to pay out over the 2003-05 biennium. There's quite a delay sometimes between the actual reimbursement and payout of costs on the billings for the fire program. It can be a couple years after the season. Package 112, fire program federal fund grants limitation, $12.6 million. This would be federal funding. The department is expecting there to be made available through the National Fire Plan a higher level of grant funding that's been available in the past. These dollars have been increasing over the last couple of biennia. We would like to have three limited duration positions to help manage these grant programs as they come through. Positions would be limited because we're uncertain exactly what the level of funding will be and would not really know for what kind of duration of time those positions would need to be active. Policy Package 113, Fire Program Administration and Contracting, $639,000. This adds other funds expenditure limitation and 16 positions to handle increasing workload in the cooperative fire program. These positions would administer crew contracts, coordinate with other agencies, develop standards, and provide training. On page 13, package 114, Emergency Fire Cost Committee limitation increase. This is a non-limited expenditure of $4.8 million. This would increase the annual expenditure limitation for the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund to $12.5 million as provided for in House Bill 2301. The package also brings the administrative position which supports the Fire Cost Committee onto budget. Currently, this position doesn't really show up in the EFCC budget. I believe that House, that bill is at Ways and Means or will be here shortly, and that could very well change based on what needs to happen with the whole fire program and fire insurance and deductible things like that. So that's an area that we may see some adjustments in. Package 131, Tillamook Interpretive Center Operations at $418,000. This adds other funds expenditure limitation and 11 positions to operate the Tillamook Interpretive Center, which is expected to open in spring 2005. You'll see a high number of positions, but this is actually a low number of full-time equivalents because he's come on towards the very end of the biennium. In the 05-07 biennium, they would be full-time positions. Package 132, Forest Management Implementation at $1.8 million. This package adds other funds expenditure limitation and 14 positions to implement integrated forest management plans. Revenue from forest products sold off state forest lands would support the package. So this is a package in the state forest program area. On page 14, Package 133, federal funds limitation of $221 million. This provides for the receipt and expenditure of federal dollars related to recreation enhancement, stream restoration, and fish passage improvements on state forest lands. Package 141, forestry assistance realignment, $255,000. This package would add other funds limitation and two positions to maintain assistance to family forest landowners in the areas of forest health, road surveys, and forest management standards. This is a package in the forestry assistance program area. Package 142, increased forest land enhancement cost share at $1.6 million. This package adds federal funds limitation and one position to manage federal resources available specifically through the forest land enhancement program. This program will help family forest landowners and non-industrial private landowners implement practices to improve forest health and productivity. So once again, here's another federal funding source that's anticipated to increase over the course of the 2003-05 biennium. On page 15, package 143, establish the Forest Legacy subprogram, about $5 million for this program. This adds expenditure limitation and creates a budget structure for the program. Currently, the department has not yet received any dollars for the program, but it would like to kind of isolate it in the budget so we could watch it closely and track those dollars when and if the dollars start flowing through. This federal initiative tries to protect environmentally important forests threatened by conversion to non-forest uses. the federal government, along with state and local partners, either buys the right to restrict land development or purchases the land from willing sellers outright to keep it in its natural state. Package 162, increased capability for the smoke management subprogram at $218,000. This package would add federal funds limitation in one position to alleviate meteorological workload increases, a higher number of prescribed burns, especially on federally managed lands east of the Cascades, is driving the additional workload, hence that's why the federal funds would support that additional position. Package 181, facilities maintenance program and limitation. This is a net zero package that moves some other funds expenditure limitation and one position from the agency administration program unit to a new unit called facilities maintenance and development. The department is trying to improve its property management activities and feels like by moving this particular unit and isolating it in the budget, it can have better control over that function and centralize those management and maintenance activities. And that's all the packages in the Department of Forestry budget. If you have any questions, I will try to answer them.
Package 143, is that all pass-through money or is there administrative money?
Chairman, there is an administrative component that the department will receive, yes.
You know what percentage that is?
Chairman, actually not off the top of my head, no. I can get for you.
Any other questions from committee?
Mr. Chair, so that's not all federal money?
It is
Chairman Messerly, Senator Deese, it's federal money, but the department does get to keep a portion of the dollars for administering the program.
Any other questions? Thank you, Lori. Mr. Wu, we're ready for you.
Chairman Messerly and member of the subcommittee, for the record, I'm Roy Wu, acting state forester. And as I go through my summary, I'll be covering who we are, or describing who we are and describing the consequences and, if you will, the challenges and the impacts by program and the priorities for the agency along with the prioritized list of services. The Board of Forestry's strategic objectives is to promote and preserve the forest land base that is sustainable, healthy, and diverse, while providing the economic, social, and environmental goods. And we do this by delivery of an adequate forest protection system, a practical regulatory for forest practices, and forestry assistance stewardship that goes beyond the regulatory standards. Also, the board forestry objective is to provide assurance that there's understanding and that the public is informed as we go through a decision-making process about the role and the function of Oregon forests. And by the way, I believe this PowerPoint presentation is a hard copy in your materials.
Roy, if we move on.
Okay.
I just want to ask the committee if we'll try to stop the sections, and then if you could take notes on the last question at that point. Our last budget we dealt with last week, we kind of got bogged down and asking questions, and I want to make sure this is a very complicated budget. I want to make sure we get through all the information. So if you could work with me on that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. I think if you see in your hard copy handout of the presentation, there's a mission statement there of the department that reflects the Board of Forestry's objective. And to achieve the board's objective, the department has core business functions that are integrated and interrelated, and they are the forest protection, which involves fire and insect disease, managing state-owned forest resources, and facilitating forest stewardship on private lands through education, assistance, and regulation with the focus of meeting landowner objectives. There's really also another core business function, and I describe it as leadership, especially in this competitive environment in which we're involved in natural resources. And this leadership is based on the foundation of an ongoing assessment and analysis of Oregon's forests, development and influence of policies at the state, national, and international levels. I believe given the competitiveness and the competition for how we use the resources in the state of Oregon and actually nationally, that this policy development, along with our ability to influence, particularly at the federal level, their policies, is becoming more and more important. And I'll describe that a little more as I go on. We implement our core business functions through programs. What you see here is four operating programs, along with resource planning and our administration. How we're funded is based on the principle of shared values and benefits between the private and public sectors, as Lori described earlier. In the fire protection program, is 50% landowner assessment, and 50% general fund, and in forest practices, is 40% harvest tax and 60% general fund, and in forestry assistance, again, as Lori described, it is federal programs and some general fund, if you will. The state forest programs self-supporting from the revenues that we derive from active management and administration of the agency's prorated of all the above funds. We have a vision for the future that basically we describe as an opportunity for the Department of Forestry, and that is achieving the environmental, the ecological, economic, and social potential of our forest resources to enhance the prosperity and the quality of life for all Oregonians. Almost half of the state's land base is forest, among the most productive in the world. Natural resources remain the economic foundation of many rural communities. Oregon is still the largest producer of forest products among the 50 states. Based on multiple public surveys and the most recent surveys conducted by Davis and Hibbets, Oregon's values, beliefs, and needs are: they prefer a balanced forest management on public and private lands, concern about a variety of forest-related issues, particularly water quality, and their increased concern about wildfires and how to prevent and pay for them, concerns about environmental extremism, and there is a perception that there needs to be more harvesting needed to address fire prevention and the economy. The pie chart there is an attempt to describe the balance that the surveys suggest that the public is looking for in our forest resources, which is environmental, social, and economic. Challenge for our programs in the department for the 0305 in the fire program: continued drought conditions in many parts of the state. Oh, I skipped ahead. I'm sorry. Moving along. Well,
right, we have 4 days.
Okay. What we have done so far in terms of addressing the issues of forestry is we have well-developed policies and programs to support its natural resources. Oregon Forest Practices Act, the Oregon Fire Protection System, the Oregon Plan for Watershed and Salmon, and we have a well-developed ability to monitor forest health and the forestry program for Oregon. The results are the timber growth significantly exceeds harvest, successful reforestation following harvesting, and over 90% of the historical forest land is still in forest use, and public support for a balanced management approach. Now, I think I'll go into challenges in the fire program. Continue drought.
Right, maybe this is a good point.
Sure.
Just stop and check and see if we have any questions.
If not, I do have one, Roy. The 90% of historical forest land. My memory tells me that I've heard figures that we actually have more trees in the state now than we did when the state was being settled. Is that? Are we talking about acreage as opposed to the concentration of trees on that acreage, or is my information wrong?
Chair Merzley and member of the subcommittee, no, you're not wrong. We have more acres in the state of Oregon that are with trees, or if you will, reforested in trees. What this 90% is alluding to is actually a land use issue, that we have not lost forest land base to other uses, such as urban development, et cetera.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay. Proceed.
Challenges for the fire program for the 03-05 biennium is the continual drought condition in many parts of the state, particularly in eastern Oregon and southern Oregon. We have large fields that have low fuel moisture, who has not recovered in the last 3 years. These large fuels, because of their size, do not gain or lose fuels very fast, but once they reach their peak, it takes a long time for them to get back to equilibrium. We've had a continued 3 years of drought, if you will, and these large fuels just have not retained their fuel moisture back to normal. Also, 75% of Oregon is an abnormal fuel condition class. I will show you a map of that later that actually describe how it's distributed in the state of Oregon. The point here is that three-quarters of the state's forest conditions are in a very heavy fuel buildup. Limitations of the ability of the Forest Service and other federal agencies to aggressively suppress fires because of their policies, because of things that have happened in terms of fatalities and subsequent policies. Also, the continuing grounding of 25% of their large air tanker fleets, the ones that drop retardant on fires for initial attack and large fire suppression efforts, and a potential grounding of lead planes, which are used in situations where there are multiple fires or congestion, such as in the wildland interface. Without these lead planes, these large air tankers, if they are used at all, are not as effective. Also, the challenges for the fire season for the biennium is the general fund budget reduction impacting ODF's adequate level of protection, the uncertainty of suppression financing system in the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, and a loss of experience in the fire program personnel due to retirement. For example, calendar last year we experienced 35 retirements, and I believe 8 or 10 within the month of December. And then a loss of overhead from other program areas due to retirement. National Guard resources that we've relied upon in severe fire seasons are now on the other side of the world, and they are no longer available to us. Our capacity to use that resources has been severely limited. I mentioned earlier that three-quarters of the state of Oregon is in a, if you will, a severe condition for fuel buildup. The fuchsia-colored areas on that map represents that condition. And the next slide will show from last year where the large fires were at. So there is a very direct correlation into, if you will, severe fire behavior and conditions, if you will, large fires, and where those fuel classifications are at in the state.
Ray, could I ask you to bring us tomorrow or the next day larger maps in color so we can put those in our... And that's for people like Wayne and I who've got gray hair. We can't read these small maps. If you do, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. I will. Well, looking at the impacts of the situation I just described, in our modeling, and as if you will, as I was describing earlier, the benefits of good analysis and assessment, we're projecting 5% increase in the number of fires, 190% increase in acres burned, and $11 million increase in claims to the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, and $22 million increase in damage. If you will, when you consider the cost for suppression as a result of this as we model this situation, and then the loss of resources is $27 million net annually. Moving on to the Forest Practices Program, the challenges are to maintain that business climate for the continued growing and harvesting of timber, and the maintenance and to maintain that forest land base for that purpose is threatened by federal regulatory burdens and federal ESA-related lawsuits.
Right, let's stop here and see if there's any questions on the fire protection segment of your budget. Representative Krieger.
Mr. Chair, right back on page 8, the urban interface problems and priorities, there was a program being developed for training rural fire departments regarding that. Where are you on doing that and delivering it and having those rural fire departments trained?
Chair Mearsley and member of the subcommittee, a couple of things in that in with the urban interface and working with the rural fire departments. In the interfaces, we work very closely with the rural fire departments. And in places where there's unprotected lands and there are structures, we work with the state fire marshal very closely. The key to the success of that program is, number one, training, as you alluded, Representative Krieger, but also equipment, providing them enough equipment and capacity to respond to these fires. For a while there, we were doing real good with providing federal excess property for these fire departments and the training that goes with them. And also when a national fire plan was established in Congress, that was also an effort to help these people, if you will, become increase their capacity to help in these areas. So I would say because of those two programs, we're making significant headway in working with the rural communities and having the capacity to work in the interface. The issue still remains with us is those areas where there are structures in the unprotected land areas.
Senator Dukes.
And to Representative Krieger, I'm starting to think that urban-rural interface has to do with when the city folks buy a second home and they buy it next to the forest land. They never buy the forest land. They always buy it right next to it. The statewide annual impacts on page 9, can I assume that somewhere in that castle of proposals that we went over quickly a few minutes ago, that there's something in here to improve this situation? We're working on a plan? I mean, increasing the number of acres burned by 188% every year is a good way to reduce the population of the state, but it's about all I can see. These are pretty grim statistics. Are we working on something that we will hear about later
Yes. I'll go into that in quite a bit of detail when we talk about the protection program. But just a little bit of preview, it's how we are prepared to enter the start of this fire season, which historically will start in June, mid-June, early July. And how we're looking at working with the federal government in terms of their protection issues. So we'll talk about that on Friday. Not on one that make this thing last longer if we need to.
There's not much we can do about 5% increase in the number of fire. Well, I mean, there are some things we can do, but lightning strikes and we've got nothing to do with it, and people go and light fires when they're not supposed to, and we can't control those kinds of things. But the increase in the number of acres burned and some of these other things, increase in total cost and loss, it seems to me we can do some things, but if we put the money in the right place. So. I look forward to it.
Roy, I wanted to bring you back to page 7 as well. Discussions of fuel load. If you could expand that a little bit, are we making any headway on that? And also in the areas such as the Biscuit Fire, where we have had fires in the past years, and including last year, is there any movement going in to fall the snags and that type of thing? Because I understand the Biscuit Fire literally started in some snags that were left from a fire 5 or 6 years ago. Is there any activity, federal as well as private and state lands, to reduce that risk and that load?
Chair Mersley and member of the subcommittee, because of the National Fire Plan, if you will, the federal funding that we've been receiving through grant, it's a competitive grant program with the federal government, we are making significant progress and, number one, identifying among communities where those areas are at and needs treatment, also adjacent to the federal forest landowners, and also working on prevention programs that help communities use the right material, think about the appropriate access in these communities as they build. The challenge becomes is that there is so much of it that we project it'll take 10 years at the current rate that we're at in doing fuel treatment, working these communities to really get to what I describe as a change in momentum in terms of what that landscape will look like. And when you look at that map of class 3 and 2, the challenge becomes as we're treating class 3, the class 2s become 3s, so it's kind of getting ahead of the ball game here with our fuel conditions. Now, a lot of it is addressing the federal policies that allows the federal agencies to also treat that fuel condition that's on them. And the challenge is pretty overwhelming because the court system really been an issue with the federal agencies being able to do that. Now, we as an agency are working with the federal agencies and congressional folks and the administration about what these policy changes should look like and help them, if you will, get to the point where they can treat the Biscuit Fire. Chair Miserly, the last time I read about the Biscuit Fire, they're having the usual challenge with the courts in doing some significant salvage logging even among the roads in that, and there isn't a lot of them compared to that fire, but they're trying to go in there and actually salvage timber along the roads, and last time I read about where they're at on that, the court system has gotten stopped.
How much would it reduce the risk, Roy, to just fall those snags? Will they hold them off or build roads into them to salvage them, or they might just get them on the ground?
Well, our experience in the Tillamook burn when, back in the 40s and 50s, that was one of the keys, and if you will, fireproofing that forest was to remove those snags and get them down, build roads in there so we had access, and if you will, manage the vegetation. Because what happens is, I understand, in the Biscuit Fire and that particular system, the ecosystem, is that if you don't do that, a brush or other vegetation will come up and it'll become prone and subject to fire again.
Okay. Yes, Senator. Excuse me, Representative Morgan.
I think that it is commendable that there is a program that looks like it has some measure of success that relates to the urban-rural interface, because truly if you have to deal with keeping fires out of urban areas, you have huge costs involved because you have to protect the structures too. But in my experience, when you have a lightning storm go through, the strikes predominantly hit on the tops of the hills, and, you know, places where there's mineralization and things like that. And they're often far away from population bases. And I think that the situation that we had with the Biscuit Fire, where there was so much snag material left in there from when we called it the Silver Fire, that you've got a situation that's kind of analogous to the Tillamook burn, where the same places burned three times. And I'm wondering, it would seem that there would need to be a piece of it that dealt with those areas that are prone to lightning strikes, because I don't think it's rocket science to figure out where those are, and that there are sites where there's a high probability that you're going to get a hit if you got a storm going through.
Chairman Lee and member of the subcommittee, actually in the Oregon Department of Forestry's protection mobilization plan and our cooperation with private landowners and federal agencies, that's exactly what we do. We look at our history. Matter of fact, we do initial attack analysis and look at where our fire starts historically has been and why, and then actually prepare a mobilization plan to address that very issue, Representative Morgan.
But now the follow-up. It would also seem to me that the privately owned lands and the state lands don't have the fuel load issues that the federal lands have on them. And it's essentially, we can kind of stand on the sidelines and scream at our federal partners about what anguish they're putting us through, but we don't have any control over it.
Chair Marzoli and member of the subcommittee, we are working with the regional forester and the state director of the Bureau of Land Management, and I think because of last fire season, we've gotten the attention of some congressional members and staff in the state of Oregon and the administration that because of this situation, both historically, what got us to here, that we have an opportunity to try to change those policies so we can see some changes on the ground with their fuel types and their management. I know, for example, in October and November, former State Forester Jim Brown, myself, Boise Cascade out of Medford, we hosted the governor the regional forester and the state director of the Bureau of Land Management, and actually showed them what their policy currently, the risk that they put on private landowners and their investment. And I would say that those two individuals, both the regional forester and the state director of the Bureau of Land Management, clearly understand the point we're trying to make. And I would say that we're actually working together to try to make those policy changes at the congressional level, at the national level, so we can address this frustration that many people have about their management and subsequently the conditions that we have left with.
Right, we're 2 or 3 months away from the fire season. Are we going to have policies and memorandums in place for the approaching fire season?
Yes, as we, Chair Miserly and members of the subcommittee, yes, we have made subsequent changes with the Forest Service, particularly about their fire suppression policies. I'll cite a couple of three examples here in a minute, but I would say that we're pretty effective in getting their attention about what happened, what didn't happen this fire season, and actually went and, again, through our ability to do analysis and an assessment of the situation and get data, we were able to very effectively show them the result, the impact to the state of Oregon and to our landowners, and even on impacts on them, like the endangered species, that we just couldn't see this happening again. And one example is that their solicitor, Forest Service's solicitor, have written an opinion to the Forest Service in Region 6 that actually stated that the state of Oregon take independent action with our resources, suppress fires on their ownership, and then we, as the state of Oregon, can ask for reimbursement. That will give us a major capacity from last year where we had resources that we could, if you will, apply to their fires, and we were not able to, and we have that capacity for this upcoming fire season. Another example I would use is, and it's a pretty simple one, is the ability for them to, after 12 midnight, to still fight fire and engage on initial attack. Last year there were cases where they worked up to their shift and they could no longer engage in initial attack, and they disengaged. And they have changed. Actually, they have clarified the flexibility among their line officers about that practice, and our hope this year is that they will not do that when midnight comes, that they'll stay with the fire and continue to engage in that fire. And I have to say, in their defense, because of the fatality in northern Washington 2 years ago, referred to as the 30-mile fire fatality, and it's somehow the risk aversion of the federal agency has become more, if you will, become their mission. Why our position is that we always want to do things safely, and we always measure and deal with risk. But our objective and our mission is still to suppress that fire as small as possible. And I think the good news is that working with folks like the Undersecretary Mark Ray, people in Washington, D.C., Jerry Williams in the Aviation Fire Office, as well as the Region 6 folks, that they hear that and they're working very hard with us to make these changes that I outlined.
Representative Morgan?
I think one of the things that became real clear to us in the last summer fire season was that the ability to get on the fires and get them out where they're still small is really just critical. I mean, I don't know that you could isolate a factor that's more important than that in terms of being able to control them when they're less than 10 acres and then when they're less than 50 acres. And that I saw a real interesting map that was done of the southwest corner of Oregon where they took a base of ownerships and then laid the lightning strikes over top of it and then laid the perimeter size of the fires when they were contained over the top of that. And the fires that were on the BLM ground and the privately owned ground were put out really quickly, and they were really small, little, discrete places. But the fires that were on the federal ownership were a whole other situation. And so it would seem that if the federal government is risk aversion because of they're risk averse because of the OSHA ruling, that it would be in their best interest to get in there while the fires are small and they have essentially a lot less risk than they do if they've got a Tiller Complex fire or a Biscuit fire. And I'm wondering what's going on in terms of that initial attack, whether they're going to be more aggressive than they are and get the decision-making apparatus involved so that they can get on top of it before they create a city to run the thing out of. I mean, I shouldn't let my editorial perspective intrude on this, but it's real frustrating to see that.
Is that a question or a story?
Yeah, I'm just curious what the discussions are about increasing their ability to do initial attack and take that part of it more seriously.
Chair Meserly and Representative Morgan and member subcommittee, the conversation certainly at our Salem and a Region 6 level in Portland is that there is an acknowledgement of our concern of their capacity to do effective initial attack for either by visitor policy or risk aversion, if I may generally characterize, and also that usually in the middle of the summer their initial attack forces are drawn down to zero. And in our conversation to date, Region 6 is very aware up to the point that they have, if you will put out instructions to their line officers, that they will do a drawdown analysis to come up with what they really need to stay at home to address their fire situation and not send everyone out to like Arizona or Colorado or some other part of the state of Oregon where there's fire. So I think that, again, the conversation is, I would describe it as, we have their attention, we're working together to get them to identify what kind of things that we like to see them do to, if you will, be effective in aggressive initial attack. We know they have challenges now, well, we all do, with these air tankers, a quarter of them being offline because the wing's coming off last year. We're submitting a federal grant proposal for the government to provide us money to put on two air tankers on contract for ODF to help mitigate the fact that the Forest Service is going to lose 25% of their large air tankers. And also we're requesting money for additional helicopters because of the National Guard situation. Now, how successful we are with that, we don't know. But I'm working with the governor's office. And matter of fact, as of this morning, I talked to the deputy chief of staff, who will talk to the governor, and the governor will get a letter out to the congressional members to see if we can get this money to do this so we can come into this fire season in light of the challenges that I described earlier.
One more. Roy, you mentioned that you have some kind of a legal opinion that says that the state can go on to federal lands and put out fires and then bill them. Is that a strong enough thing that you would actually form policy around it?
Chair Meserly and Representative Morgan, member of the committee, that is our intent and our goal. Matter of fact, I have shared the solicitor's document with our Attorney General's office. We'll be following with our Attorney General, if you will, to find out what that really means in terms of the Oregon's right to do that and to be able to turn around and not just take action, but to get reimbursement from the federal agencies. The key there is what is in our parent agreements and our co-op agreements, both locally and at the regional level. To answer your question directly, Representative Morgan, we are working with the Forest Service where we are not talking just in terms of rhetoric or just generalities, but we're using actual situations that happened to us last year where the Forest Service would not recognize the state's standards and kept our, in this case, our helicopters away from taking action on their fires. And the Forest Service is now saying that will change for this coming fire season, that these helicopters, our resources, will be permitted to take action on those fires on them, and we'll be able to come back and ask for reimbursement for that action. We're working on solidifying those agreements, and that's where our Attorney General's office will come in and help with those agreements.
Mr. Chair, could I request, if it isn't, you know, like a 2-inch thick document, could we get a copy of that opinion or the executive summary of it?
Yes.
Very, very good. Representative Krager and then Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, the whole thing you're discussing is the lack of management of forest land, the federal lands, for years. You have to recognize, I don't know if they still do, but for years they had a program where they were either blowing the tops out of trees for snags or cutting them out in the same areas that they had not done any management for fuel loads. If you go and look on the west side of Curry County, especially on the south end, they had tens of thousands of Port Orford cedar trees that were dead in there. And as you drove up 199, you could see them on both sides of the road. You go look where that burned, that whole thing was like a Roman count. Every one of those through that entire area, those thousands of cedar trees between 5 and 10 years old standing there, that's what kept the fire going in there. And they couldn't put it out.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on an issue raised by Representative Morgan, for 20 years I was in the commercial helicopter business, and we fought lots and lots of fires. The plethora of contradictions between state and federal is almost criminal. And I'm looking around at the room of companies that are represented by large flight departments, Weyerhaeuser. To have assets that are unable to be used because of some of the magnificently dumb rules, the need for fire bosses to be there, and you've got 17 helicopters parked because some guy didn't arrive at the fire base. I think rather than going to the feds and continuing to ask for money, probably the greatest service that the state could do is to ask for some relief from these mind-bogglingly dumb rules, and that you might want to take with as your allies folks from the private sector who are responders under those contracts, or flight departments from the private timber companies, and perhaps use them as resources instead of as adversaries. It's been my experience over 20 years that frequently the vendors were treated both on the federal forests and by the state as adversaries and people to be dismissed. They are a wealth of information, and I can't commend to you strongly enough using them as partners to try to see how we can maximize preciously scarce resources.
Chair Mearsley and Representative Johnson and member of the committee, I can't agree with you more. Matter of fact, I know that we know this individual, Bob Ferreira, there in Ashland. He's been instrumental in helping us, if you will, frame the debate, and actually was instrumental in getting Mark Ray, the undersecretary, and staff of the Oregon's congressional members to attend a meeting in Portland, which former state forester Jim Brown attended. And that was actually the agreement that Mark Ray told Jim Brown, was that if these issues don't get addressed, that they come back and we'll have a meeting again with the Washington folks. And since then, Oregon Department of Forestry staff and myself have been working with Bob and also with Congressman Walden's office, and we are exactly doing that. I totally agree with you, Representative Johnson.
One last comment. I know that Bob Ferreira, who I've sold helicopters to before and who's a great guy, I know that this has been a big issue with him, as has the issue of private use.
where state agencies are seduced into taking ownership of all of this military surplus hardware that in some cases is junk, and that's been an issue. I think that there is a complementary role for aircraft under contract as well as private sector folks to play a role in fighting conflagration, and I can't stress more seriously how much I think it is a role of your agency to help broker those agreements instead of treating the private folks as though somehow they're bad guys. They've got a definite role to play, and these air forces can complement each other rather than fight each other.
Roy, I want to give you a chance to put on the record when I was briefed on the Biscuit Fire this last summer and fall. It was my understanding that Oregon's method of fighting fire has a much less accident rate and injury than the federal government does, where they do not aggressively fight, nor do they fight the fires in the, after dark. Even though, maybe that's not the right word, not even though, but Oregon does this through mitigation of spotters and support with helicopters and this type of thing to control the fire. Could you help me sum that up, put it on the record so that it's part of our record here today?
Right. Chair Mersley, a member of the subcommittee, I will attempt to. I know that we have document at Department of Forestry that our aviation and our firefighting history is one of the better ones, especially compared to the Forest Service. And this premise on the notion that if we suppress our fires at the smallest size possible, that it is not only a safer fire than a larger one, but it is also more economically as opposed to fighting a larger fire, and I think that anyone common sense can understand that. I would be glad to come back tomorrow and actually quote or have copies of our safety records from last year. And in fact, if I remember, when I looked at those numbers, I was actually surprised that they were the way that they were, given the kind of fire season we have.
Okay, thank you. Would you like to proceed?
I assume you're on page 10.
Yes. Forest practices. Just briefly, the challenge is to continue that favorable business climate for the continuous growing and harvesting of timber and maintaining that forest land base for that purpose. As we look at threats by the federal regulatory burden and the ESA related lawsuits, we also observe that there is a limited accountability of some to support a collaborative process. In other words, they like to sue us if they don't get their way. And that's bottom line, and the challenge there is the mounting legal costs, which we are experiencing. The one that comes to my mind currently is the Pacific Rivers lawsuit. Also,
Chair, could we get just a real short update on where we're at on that?
Did you want to cover that now, or will you be getting more into depth?
I can get into more depth on that. I'd have to ask someone that's hopefully sitting behind me to...
They're perking up.
Okay.
I think it'd be better if we, when they give their presentation,
okay,
at the end of that.
Okay. Also that, when you look at bills that are being introduced and ballot measures that we hear that might be coming our way, a mounted effort to deal with public confidence that our resources are not protected appropriately, nor is our forest land base managed appropriately. Again, we view that as a threat. What we believe is appropriate and proper management. And also in the forest practices program, loss of program expertise due to retirement, and also reduce program resources with loss of service geographically. When we go into the forestry program in the next couple of days, we'll go into detail, but essentially the level of service will be severely impacted at the field level, if you will, just because of the reductions we've had to make in those positions. And then at risk for a challenge is maintaining investment in technical capacity and experience and an effort and progress under the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watershed. Impacts I've already hinted at is that to diminish the agency's ability to test the Forest Practices Act's effectiveness, compliance, and decreasing the capacity to demonstrate to the federal and state agencies, as well as stakeholders and special interest groups, that the Forest Practices Act is based on best available science.
Do we have any questions for this segment? Okay, Roy, thanks.
Challenge of the Forestry Assistance Program is reduce program resources with the loss of services, particularly in geographical coverage for the Oregon small woodland and family forestry family owners. Inadequate staff capacity to capture additional opportunities as the National Fire Plan, Tree Farm Program presents themselves. Another challenge or additional challenge is meeting coordination needs under the Oregon Plan and other programs, for example, watershed councils and the SW and CDs. The impact here in the Forestry Assistance Program is the state will not realize the full contribution of the family forest land owners.
Let's open it. Any questions on this segment? Roy, I'm interested in the issue of service foresters. Has there been any meetings between the private sector service to small private landowners or extension service? And there was some discussion, I believe, last session of let's get a group together and see if we can organize these efforts and try not to leave gaps throughout the state. But was that done at all?
Chair Mearsley, member of the subcommittee, I am not aware of that. That does not mean it does not have happened. I will come prepared in the next few days to address that. The one thing we are doing is we're looking at the budget challenge of 03-05 with the Forestry Assistance Program is to merge that staff with the Forest Practices staff to utilize effectively or more effectively our policy and technical staff members. And because of looking at the reductions of both of those programs, it only makes sense that we merge those two programs so we can utilize what resources we have in both those programs more effectively. But I will come back and address that head on.
Any other questions on this segment? Proceed.
Challenge.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Coming from a family that owns a very small forest land parcel, we're always appreciative for whatever help we can get. And I'm trying to separate the balance between the services that you talk about in the budget presentation you may not be able to provide. I am unaware of how much effort has been made to do fee-for-service, to be able to continue to have the technical assistance that I presume many family forest land owners would value enough to pay for. Do you have any data on that?
Chair Mearsley, a member of the committee, and Representative Johnson, I do not believe that we have. I do remember 10 years ago we talked about the notion of both combining fee-for-services and utilizing existing consultant, professional foresters to help. I'd have to come back and provide more definite data or an answer to your question, because at this time, if I try to answer, it'd just be a guess, and we'd be going back to 10 years ago when
that's fine. One year.
Yeah. Okay. Challenge of the State Forest Program: providing ESA assurance for Western Oregon State Forest in order to maintain or increase our harvest level. I will use a couple of examples, and I understand that was quite a conversation last week with the Division of State Lands. Another challenge in State Forest is fully implement the forest management plan and achieving outputs for current program resources, and the challenge of increasing recreation demand in the near urban areas or forests such as the Tillamook. Back to the ESA assurance for the Western Oregon State Forest. In the Elliott State Forest, I believe in the early 90s, when the spotted owl and the marbled marlette were listed under the Endangered Species Act, the state was obligated to operate under what we call a take avoidance as we manage particular timber sale program. So in the case of the owls, it's basically circle management. And it came clear when those species were listed that when we found out about what an HCP would allow us to do, we pursued an HCP. Well, let me back up. When those undertake avoidance, the harvest went from 50 million to a projected level of 5 because of take avoidance in the early 90s when those species got listed. Under an HCP, the volume...
Just to clarify, with take avoidance, are you talking about a 4D exemption?
No. Representative Morgan, Chair Miserly, and Representative Committee. Take avoidance would be, like in the case of the spotted owl, you'd have to manage around a spotted owl circle. And I believe that in Western Oregon, that part of the state, it's thousands of acres, if not hundreds of acres, in which we are hampered in terms of what we can do in that owl circle, in terms of removing volume that impact their habitat. So, a 4D, as I understand, we can talk about this. Actually, if the committee would like, I can ask Dr. John Buter to come and actually address this issue on Wednesday. He'll be here in town and actually address this in detail, more that I can describe or feel comfortable describing. But generally, a take avoidance is very restrictive. It actually we went from 50 to a projected of 5 million board feet without an HCP if we had to manage under a take avoidance. And the Endangered Species Act basically says that if you have to do certain things within its environment, its habitat, to protect it, or we're at risk as an agency of committing a criminal or violating the Endangered Species Act. When we got under an HCP, the volume went up to about 28 to 30 million, and the marbled marlette HCP has expired, and I think as you heard last week, we're working on an HCP for the marbled marlette, and actually it's an all-species HCP that'll get us back to the 28 to 30 million board feet that we've been under the original HCP, where we had both the marlette and the spotted owl at the Elliott. The Endangered Species Act, and when they listed the owls and the marlettes, was a significant encumbrance on what we enjoyed or what we have done historically under both our harvests and the cost of just doing business because of surveys. Matter of fact, under a take avoidance, you'd have to do surveys every year to see where your species are at, just to, if you will, to manage around them. And that additional cost has been significant.
So this is an HCP that will deal with both the owl and the murrelet?
The HCP that we're working with Dr. Buter and with the services on, it would be an all-species HCP, which would include the fish, the listed fish, the murrelet, which we have no HCP for now because the murrelet HCP expired, and I believe we didn't have one for the salmon in the Elliott. The original did not. Currently, the spotted owl HCP is still in effect. As a matter of business decision, this all-species HCP would have to get us back to 28 or 30 million board feet. And if that's the case, then we would modify the current owl HCP and actually, if you will, phase it out and bring it into the new to the new all-species HCP. So we're not giving up the current owl HCP until we see what we can get with this new all-species one.
Do you, if I might have a follow-up, Mr. Chair, what's the time frame on this?
The plan is to have an all-species HCP late 05 or early 06.
So we have, if I might have another follow-up, then. The discussion that we got into over the Division of State Lands budget was the fact that we're the Common School Trust Fund's netting out very little money right now when you take the management expenses away from the money that's generated from timber harvest. So what I heard you saying, correct me if I'm not right, is that the earliest we would see a turnaround in that would be 07?
I believe if we get an HCP in early 06, our harvest would be for, let's see, we develop our annual harvest plan on a fiscal year basis. So I believe that if we were to get an HCP late 05, we can get a turnaround in our harvest for fiscal year 06. Now, the folks in the Elliott are working real hard. Matter of fact, when I talked to them this morning, when I talked to the folks in Coos Bay, they're projecting that this upcoming fiscal year harvest plan will still be around 20 and 26 million. And they're just working real hard to find those areas. And in fact, what they're doing is they're moving to a younger stand in terms of looking at harvest opportunities as opposed to going to the older stand types in which the murrelets are. Folks there are telling me they're finding murrelets almost on a weekly basis in the Elliott. So it is an issue, Representative Morgan, is how long we can keep that harvest up until we get an HCP, but that's really the business decision of getting an HCP so we can go back up to that volume.
One more, and then we need to move along.
Okay. It would seem that we've got one of those classic catch-22s in policy where we've got the common school trust lands that are supposed to be managed for the highest return back to the common school trust fund, and that crashes into the ESA. And that what I'm curious about is you must have done some kind of work about what has precedence over what and what direction to go in pursuing policy. Can you talk to us about what you've worked out in that arena?
Chair Miserly, Representative Morgan, and members of the committee, I'm not sure of the question.
Well, you must, at the Board of Forestry, and as you make your management decisions about what to do with the Elliott, for example, you must be weighing the requirements of the land to generate money for the school trust fund beside the ESA and the clean water issues that you have to go with. Talk to us about where the whole thing weighs out. I mean, which one takes precedent, and would delisting the Murillette have any impact? I mean, I'm just kind of curious about where your policy discussions are. And, I mean, obviously you see HCP as the best direction to go in, but is there more potential to push the envelope to get the cut up?
Actually, Representative, we're going to get more in depth on this as we go through the week. There might be more. I think it's great to ask the question now, but if we could hold off the answer until your department heads come back and talk to us, might be better.
Yeah, I'd be very willing to do that.
Thanks. Be glad to do that. And I will ask Dr. Buter really to come also on Wednesday to help not only address the policy question, Representative Morgan, that you're alluding to, as the board, and also the, if you will, the state land board, because he's going to be addressing the state land board on, I believe, on either Tuesday or Wednesday. I have to check, but it's one of those 2 days.
On Wednesday.
Okay, proceed. Okay. Challenges to the forest resource and public affairs program. And this is the part that I alluded to early about the leadership component of the agency to be able to effectively and efficiently deal with this competitive environment we have in natural resources. And is really the ability to, as I put it, know more than your opponents and or the folks that you're trying to influence policy. And you don't do that with investing this, the assessment and the analysis and the policy development part of this organization, and in a way, as I alluded earlier, this is we view this as actually our fourth business function. Being able to provide factual research and data assessment about Oregon's forest policy development versus misinformation designed to preclude forest management is got to be one of the most important things we can do as an agency to continue that climate of continuous growing and harvesting the timber and maintaining that forest land base for that purpose, as well as on managing state forests to be able to address the issue of what those policy choices we have as we move in our state forest program. And also not to forget our fire issues that we have with the federal agencies. Impacts are delay in issue analysis and policy development, longer policy implementation time frames, and associated decision making. Reduced capacity to respond to stakeholders, decision makers in a timely manner.
Any questions at this segment? Proceed.
Challenges to the administration is that increasing external controlled workloads with a static or reduced staffing, successional management or loss of program experience and expertise and institutional knowledge and memory, organizational downsizing is impacting our staff field managerial capacity and an aging infrastructure. And again, the delays and the impacts of the challenges to administration for the 0305 budget is delay in issue analysis and policy development. We're losing our edge reduced capacity to maintain the external relationship stakeholders, and to reduce the agency's overall ability to suppress fires in a militia is impacted. Matter of fact, I purposely didn't mention this in forest practices, forestry assistance, but it's not unique to those programs. But when you look at our militia capacity, and when you add up the reductions or the impacts of forest practice and forestry assistance, and also administration as well as forest resource, it's a significant impact to our firefighting program. Matter of fact, last year we looked at what or how many people we had on fires in this quote-unquote militia concept, and it was 75% of our workforce were assigned on fires in various capacities. That doesn't mean that they're all on the line with a shovel or a hose, but they're either supporting the fire effort or filling in behind someone that was on a fire assignment out of somewhere else in the state.
Roy, you've mentioned several times today the loss of personnel due to retirements or whatever is moving on. It's always appeared to me that the strengths of the Department of Forestry, which is one of the better, if not one of the better, the best run department in our state government, I think, that a big part of the reason for that was the depth in the organization, the depth in your personnel. You mentioned this enough that I'm getting concerned here. How would you plan on dealing with the loss of expertise?
Chair Mearsley and member of the subcommittee, retirees, I met with them 3 months ago and say, hey, if you want to, we'd be more than glad to hire you back on an assignment basis. I think that is one component that we are working on. That component is identifying people who are retired that would come and help us in these times of a fire emergency, which means that we're going to invest in keeping them trained and keeping them aware of our changing policies and these kind of things, but we're willing to make that investment with retirees that are willing to come back and work for us. Matter of fact, we think we can probably outfit a incident management team of just people who's retired. So that kind of characterized the significance of the folks that were leaving, but also the knowledge and expertise and experience that they're bringing. The other way we're dealing with this loss of human resources is working with other agencies in a more coordinated fashion. For example, I believe 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago, we invited, and good news is that ODF and W staff came, and actually we did training for their staff to help and support roles such as public affairs, media management, but also looking at sharing resources between the two agencies. Using their fish liberation trucks, using folks that are familiar with a local area to help with our fire program, if you will. And one area that we're starting to get into even more is with the Oregon Department of Transportation and using their equipment. Of course, we work together when they have to close roads and these kind of things. So working with other agencies, working with retirees, is what we're doing to try to address this issue of a reducing capacity in the human resource arena.
Rick, I want to make sure you have enough time to get through your proposal, but we're getting close. But could you speak to us on your plans for mentoring some of the younger people coming through? Education opportunities or just opportunities to advance and grow, and from that respect is really where I was coming from.
Chair Miserly and member of the subcommittee, apologize for forgetting that very critical, important point. We have, as an agency, we're actually for the last 2 years, maybe three, have a program in which we mentor our staff for management leadership positions. We call it the Agency Leadership Program. At the same time, we have another development program where we take the new employees, particularly those in the State Forest Program, because that's the only program we have revenue and money in which we're actually growing in terms of staffing. We're taking those relatively new employees and exposing them to the business, all the business of the agency, not just the State Forest Program, but the Fire Program and Forest Practices Program, as well as folks in Salem and what they do and staff, and exposing them with the idea that these are our department businesses, this is what we do, and that for one to, if you will, advance in the agency, it behooves employees to understand the total portfolio of what we do and encourage them to get that experience, either developmental, which we have, and we promote developmental assignments. And matter of fact, incident management team on fires, in a lot of cases, speaking for myself, I remember when I was younger, that's how I learned about the fire business. Someone just gave me just enough training to put me out there, and the rest I either did successfully or not. But I think really the mentoring, the two programs that I mentioned, is really what we're, and there may be more opportunities that we really haven't thought of, but these are just examples of just want to demonstrate to your question, Chair Miserly, the efforts that we're doing to increase our capacity. And you mentioned earlier that one of our strengths is that the backup, the militia piece about backing up people, it doesn't matter if they're in forest practices or state lands, but backing up in fire and vice versa.
Okay, thank you. Would you like to proceed to funding?
Okay. Agency funding priorities. The Forest Protection Program is our top priority, adequate level of protection. The Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, getting that addressed, in insect and disease. Forest practices is our, you know, I hate to say, is our next priority, but it is really close to fire because it is the program in which you heard me repeatedly say that provides the operating climate, the positive operating climate for continuing growing and harvesting the timber and maintaining that private forest land base for that purpose. Forestry assistant, ability to continue to administer the federal grant programs, and as I alluded earlier, to merge with the Forest Practices Program. And when we talk about the forest resource planning, is maybe a mischaracterization here, the way I have it on this list is really the piece that binds our programs in terms of being able to be competitive in a leadership role in the policy arena. And I believe that in your package, what is also a prioritized list of all services, I believe that you look at those priorities, it fits into the department's prioritized list or priority, the agency's strategic priorities.
Roy, can you tell us where that's at?
In the note presentation book is B61.
Okay. Everyone else, sorry, found it.
Under the agency summary tab.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, and the list itself is the next page.
Thank you. to speak to that?
They're basically it's the same list you just gave us.
Basically this list of prioritized service, I believe, fits and well with this with the agency's strategic priorities. One and two is our fire program. Actually, one, two, and three is our forest protection. And then what we have then is four, five, and six are forest practices. The subtlety of forest practices between number four and nine is that in a strategic way, we believe that forest practices, prevention, and education for landowners and operators, we get more return in terms of desired results, or if you will, high-level outcomes in terms of performance measures, than if we're out there and just in a regulatory action and enforcement mode. We believe, as a matter of principle, if you help people understand what the right way is, that's more efficient and effective use of our limited resources than to be out there taking enforcement action. Number six is really the piece that addresses our ability to deal with the threats that we see with the ESA, meaning that we're looking for assurances there where we can get them, and dealing with the threats with the federal regulatory burdens. And then 10 and 11 are, well, 11 is actually a non-general fund, just like number 8 and 7 is. But number 10 is our what we call our classic forestry assistant service, forestry services that we provide under general fund. Now, we still will administer that service under federal grants where we can get them.
All right. Will you also be providing us, or maybe you've got it in here someplace, prioritize your functions, but it would be helpful also if you at some point give us a prioritization of the different cut levels or different funding levels so that we can. To me, that's the most important aspect. You're the ones that have to run the program. How would you manage it?
Yeah, actually, I'll ask Clark Seeley to help us go through that list now, if the chair and subcommittee wish.
We can do that. Before you do that, but I wanted to ask about the sudden oak disease in Curry County. Will that be part of our presentation later in the week?
Yes, it will be.
Okay. Or other insects or diseases that you might have to deal with, too.
Okay.
But I'm pleased to see that that's a high priority for you. Okay. Clark, would you like to... and where would we look in our book for that?
Chair Messerly, members of the subcommittee, I'm Clark Seeley, Assistant State Forester for the Department of Forestry. If you would turn to B18 in this same section, the summary section, this begins the information in the discussion about our current 30% reduction, general fund reduction plan for the agency for 0305. Let me just say that our plan for 0305 is built principally on the work that we did in the agency and with stakeholders during 0103. And so, of course, with you, what now seems like a long time ago, 18 months ago, as we began to need to develop reduction plans for this biennium, then as that rolled into our work on 0305's budget, we carried the same strategies and principles forward. If you look at B20 and B21, just as kind of a visual high-level view, we built our strategic reduction plan based on the essentially the core business functions and the prioritized list of services, as Roy just outlined, in a strategic fashion, and the plan includes a set of 39 reduction actions. And, of course, the way the reduction list is set up, the number one action is the first thing to be reduced, and the 39th action is the last thing that we would propose to reduce. Now, as you look at these two pages, B20 is just the straight 1 through 39 listing. And again, these are in priority order. B21 has that same set of reduction actions, but it's grouped by agency program, so you can kind of get a sense for where they fall within programs. But again, when we developed our approach, we didn't merely say that fire protection is the agency's number one program, so in all cases, we'll cut it last. We did go into a level of detail in looking at the agency's programs to say, well, given our priorities and responsibilities, we could take a cut here in fire before we take a cut in forest practices. So you will see, again, the 1 through 39, you will see some reduction in really all four of the agency general fund programs as you work your way down through. But the preponderance of the general fund reductions that come early do come in forestry assistance, in forest practices, and agency administration. And in general, the forest practice or the fire protection reductions are at the lower part of the list. Now, the shaded items, the lines that are in the gray shade, are those reduction actions which either in part or in total have already been taken in the 0103 budget process and carry forward to 0305. So again, as you look at this kind of visually, if you look at the 30% list, the gray shade elements are those that were already a part of the permanent reduction plan for this biennium and carry forward into 0305. And then finally, pages B22 through B25 show you that same list of 1 through 39, which is a little bit more explanation for each of the actions rather than just a one-liner, so a little bit more of detail. And then finally, the final piece of this set of material in the book is on B26 and 27. And these are actually a pretty important couple of pages. What they show you is the effect of bringing forward to 0305 the reductions that occurred in 0103 by program and by legislative action when they occurred within the special sessions that came along. And again, this is by program. So that's.
There's a couple things I want to say. Some of us served on the special budget committee since we were going through special sessions. And some of that was pretty quick and dirty. We simply looked where there was funds available, and we didn't have much time to work it out, and that's where we made the reductions. So I'd be. If you could do this, it'd be very helpful to me, and I think maybe the rest of the committee. If you could take the governor's budgets and then break it down into 2%, 4%, 6%, and 10, up to a 10% below the governor's budgets, but also have some discussion if there were some cuts that were made in the prior, because I think the governor just passed those that were previously done too, on into his budget in the short time he had to prepare his budget. If we could have some discussions there too as to... need to make a case of where we should find other dollars to build back some of those buildings. But we obviously have to have a net balance of the governor's budget plus up to 10% reductions, further reductions.
Chair Messerly, I just had we're prepared to talk with you about that this week and can do that as well as between now and work session. I think, again, just our Our most significant concern really is the result of Special Session 5 with House Bill 5100, because more than half of our agency's general fund is the fire program piece. That took a big hit in 5100 because it was an across-the-board reduction. And in fact, if you can almost do it from here. You don't have to really even see the words on the page. If we had been taking strategic reductions according to our plan, and it may be certainly different than what your plan might be, but if we had just taken strategic reductions, the gray shading would have been complete from the top of the list down to that reduction level. But you can see that what ended up happening, and again, principally because of House Bill 5100, we had to jump all the way down to the 39th reduction item in the fire program in order to get enough reduction out of fire to meet that level. So a remix or a reshuffle of reduction actions would be something we want to look at with you.
I think that's a very good example, because as I recall, Special Session 5,
we simply looked at it and said, hey, we're through the fire season. There's cash left there. Let's grab that. And it might not hold. It will not hold true as we go into the next fire season. So,
well, Mr. Chair, too.
Excuse me. We have a question from Senator
Duke. Sorry.
Well,
my question was of you, Mr. Chair. Are they only looking at general fund, or are they looking at other funds as well for their reduction?
Well, we can look. We can fund shift or whatever, but we are very concerned about our general fund so that we can deal with the other budgets too.
So your instructions to them are just to do those cuts for general fund.
Not necessarily, no.
Because they're tied together in this budget, they would have to do it for both.
Okay.
Representative Morgan.
Good. Mr. Chair, my understanding is that the issue with fire suppression cuts are in readiness, that what we need to be able to train the crews and retrain the crews isn't going to be there this time, so we're going to essentially be going into the next fire season at a lower level of readiness that we were in the last fire season.
That's part of the discussion we're going to have. We're out of time. Thank you very much for your overview. We'll look forward to our presentation tomorrow. With that, I'll close the public hearing and adjourn the meeting.